So we are going to go through Exodus again, chapter 10 and 11.
Then the Lord said to Moses, "Go in to Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine among them, and that you may tell in the hearing of your son and your grandson how I have dealt harshly with the people of Mitzrayim, and what signs I have done among them, that you may know that I am the Lord." So Moshe and Aharon went to Pharaoh and said to him, "Thus says the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go, that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your country, and they shall cover the face of the land, so that no one can see the land. And they shall eat what is left to you after the hail, and they shall eat every tree of yours that grows in the field, and they shall fill your houses and the houses of your servants and all the people of Mitzrayim, as neither your fathers nor your grandfathers have seen, from the day that they came on earth to this day." Then he turned and went out from Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh's servants said to him, "How long shall this man be a snare to us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Do you not understand that Mitzrayim is ruined?" So Moshe and Aharon were brought back to Pharaoh, and he said to them, "Go serve the Lord your God." "But which ones are to go?" Moshe said, "We will go with our young and our old. We will go with our sons and daughters and with our flocks and herds, for we must hold a feast to the Lord." But he said to them, "The Lord be with you if I ever let you and your little ones go. Look, you have some evil purpose in mind. No, go, the men among you, and serve the Lord, for that is what you are asking." And they were driven out of Pharaoh's presence. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Stretch out your hand over the land of Mitzrayim for the locusts, so that they may come upon the land of Mitzrayim and eat every plant in the land, all that the hail has left." So Moshe stretched out his staff over the land of Mitzrayim, and the Lord brought an east wind upon the land all that day and all that night. When it was morning, the east wind brought back the locusts. The locusts came up over all the land of Mitzrayim and settled on the whole country of Mitzrayim, such a dense swarm of locusts as had never been seen before nor ever will be again. They covered the face of the whole land so that the land was darkened, and they ate all the plants in the land and all the fruit of the trees that the hail had left. Not a green thing remained, neither tree nor plant of the field, through all the land of Mitzrayim. Then Pharaoh hastily called Moshe and Aharon and said, "I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you. Now therefore forgive my sin, please, only this once, and plead with the Lord your God only to remove this death from me." So he went out from the Lord and from Pharaoh and pleaded with the Lord. And the Lord turned the wind into a very strong west wind, which lifted the locusts and drove them into the Red Sea. Not a single locust was left in all the land of Mitzrayim. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be a darkness over the land of Mitzrayim, a darkness to be felt." So Moshe stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was pitch darkness in all the land of Mitzrayim 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place 3 days, but all the people of Israel had light wherever they lived. Then Pharaoh called Moshe and said, "Go serve the Lord. Your little ones also may go with you. Only let your flocks and your herds remain." But Moshe said, "You must also let us have sacrifices and burnt offerings that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. Our livestock must go with us, not a hoof shall be left behind, for we must take them to serve the Lord our God, and we do not know what we must serve the Lord until we arrive there." But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said to them, "Get away from me, take care never to see my face again, for on the day that you see my face, you shall die." Moshe said, "As you say, I will not see your face again." Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Yet one more plague I will bring upon the Pharaoh and upon the land of Mitzrayim. Afterward, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will drive you away completely. Speak now in the hearing of the people, that they ask every man of his neighbor and every woman of her neighbor for silver and gold jewelry." And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the people of Mitzrayim. Moreover, the man Moshe was very great in the land of Mitzrayim, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, in the sight of the people. So Moshe said, "Thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out in the midst of Egypt, and every firstborn in the land of Mitzrayim shall die, from the Pharaoh's firstborn who sits on the throne, even to the firstborn of the slave girl who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the cattle. There shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Mitzrayim, such as there never has been, nor ever will be again. But not a dog shall growl against any of the people of Israel, neither man or beast, that you may know that the Lord makes a distinction between Mitzrayim and Israel. And all these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, 'Get out, you and all your people who follow you.' After that, I will go out." And he went out from Pharaoh in hot anger. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Pharaoh will not listen to you, that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Mitzrayim." Moshe and Aharon did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go out of his land.
Any thoughts?
I guess one thing that does strike me, which I maybe just personally didn't realize so much, that apparently from, I guess, verse 4 all the way through verse 8, Moses is speaking in Pharaoh's presence.
4 through 8, on chapter 10?
Chapter 11.
Oh, 11.
Actually, Pharaoh's hearing all these words about the firstborn of the land shall die, firstborn of Pharaoh from his throne. He hears all these words.
Right, it says, this is what the Yahweh said.
Yeah, it says, I didn't realize that Pharaoh was within earshot of all this. I thought he was just talking to his own people, not to Pharaoh himself.
There's some interesting things about these two chapters. Now, let's just start with verse 1 and 2 of chapter 10. What is it that Yahweh or Elohim said that he wanted to make sure that it was carried out?
He wants somebody to write it down so I'd read it.
Okay.
He wanted it to be conveyed to the sons of Israel so that they would know he was God and he was the Lord. And basically, I guess, it's to show that he is almighty.
That he is almighty. That's correct.
I think the thing is that the people would see there was a distinction between themselves in Goshen and the people of Egypt. They would get the plagues, but everything in Goshen would be perfect.
Free from the plagues. Right. Because he makes a statement there that I want your sons and your grandsons, when you enter into the land that I'm going to give you, to tell them exactly how I did it. Is it for the sake of the Egyptians? No, it's for the sake of the people of Israel. That you may know that I came. And he did what he did. Now, this particular section of Exodus, we hear more and more of the quote of God being verbally expressed unto Pharaoh and to his men. Perhaps more than any other section, right? I find it very fascinating that he went down in verse 10, it's a very interesting word, and he asked how his thus says Yahweh Elohim of the Hebrews, How long wilt thou refuse to... And some of your translations has the word humble. That's not the actual word for humble. It's entirely different meaning to the thing. It's an ancient root word meaning to depress, or figuratively to afflict yourself to me. Not just respond, but what will you do? It is called basically is to become fully participating in the action that I am going to do to you, or I have done to you already at this point in time, in this last three plagues here. And lo and behold, he says, why are you waiting so long? Let my people go and let me serve me. I'll stop hurting you. Well, it's not exactly how it worked, did it? Okay. But keep one thing in mind. We talked about this last week, that when we talk about strengthening someone's spirit, strengthening someone's mind, strengthening someone's heart, it can be positive. But in this location here, everything that God ever did increased Pharaoh's heart, not mind, not spirit, not body, mind, no, his heart against God. Every action that Yahweh ever did brought forth him being all the more hardened in his heart, bound and determined. Now, what does it mean? We use this phrase, you know, love the Lord your God with all your, all right? And then your, okay. Now, in this particular case, you know, the heart, we know from Scripture, is the center or the core of what makes you do the things you do. You may be a brilliant person. Maybe an IQ higher than anybody else's. But it's your heart that motivates you or directs you or has you do what you want to do, because that's what your, quote, heart inside of you, that spirit, that emotional thing, if I can use that terminology, makes you do something. Now, at this point in time, you're thinking, come on, Pharaoh, aren't you using your head and thinking what's going on around here? No, he was not using his head. He was increasing his anger. Bound and determined, his heart will overpower the will of the Creator. God's heart was not in this one. His anger was in this one. Toward Pharaoh. It's kind of interesting when you look at that from that point of view. And he said, now, of course, now if you refuse, he's still quoting verse 20, verse 4 here, chapter 10. Still quoting Yahweh. If thou refuse to let my people go, tomorrow I'm going to do something. Now, he's given advanced warning. What's he going to bring? Locusts. Where do locusts come from? The east. Fascinating phrase. Every time something comes from the east, and when you look at it, biblically speaking, it's always bad news. Not good news. When it comes from the west, it seems to clean up the bad news that came from the east. Now, keeping this in mind, I'm going to shift you to another thought. We know that the Messiah is going to come from the east to the west. Now, does that mean bad news? Oh, yes, it does mean bad news. All right, he's going to come as a thief. He's not going to come as a hero. He's not going to come as a loving, kind king. He's not going to come as a gentle-speaking, soft-spoken person that needs a microphone for you to hear him. He's going to come with power and might and the glory of God and the power of God with him. Now, remember El Shaddai? Shaddai means what? the deluger, the one who brought forth the flood. And why he and deluge, I mean, the rain was so heavy, that deluge, we use that in our own language, the water came and it flooded there. It was a big deluge. A lot of water came and destroyed everything. So we know that God was called a, put it point bluntly, he killed an awful lot of people. It was rain. So, and then that's his reputation, if I can use that terminology. That was the reputation of the creator of heaven and earth up until we get to Egypt. Now, as time had gone by, from the time of Abraham up to this point, when you read the book of Genesis, let me ask you, how many times, other than the time of Noah, have you seen where God brought forth destruction? Sodom and Gomorrah, Jericho. I'm sorry, what? Tower of Babel. Okay. How did he destroy that? By just changing the language. Okay, that works. But not complete, total destruction. Sodom and Gomorrah, yes. But never to a point where he is going to do this to Egypt. Now we're like 400 plus years since Sodom and Gomorrah. That's a long span of time. What happens when a people live a society in existence for 400 years? How many of you remember the history of our country even 300 years ago?
City.
But you know, we're saying that things move so fast, the third generation might remember what took place in the first generation. But times the fourth generation, huh? Great great grandpa? He's dead. Well, I care what he thinks. Yeah, okay, he wrote something down, he said something. And by the way, it's only like a phrase or statement or a few words. How many of you remember your great-great-grandfather saying something that was transferred down to you that you remember what your great-grandfather ever said? Well, don't raise your hand because it's kind of embarrassing. I did not know in my own personal life, I did not know I had a grandfather because I thought they were all dead until I was 40 years old. Then I found out I had a grandfather because I thought they were all dead. So all that's gone. My family is gone. I have no history of my background. I have no way to trace anything. And guess what? I really don't care. That's interesting. Really don't care. Okay. So we're coming back here, and God says, I want you to tell them. And there's a certain statement. We'll talk about that next week. Of what he wants them to say. And it's very important that we kind of take a look at that. But now we come here. Remember, this is during the time of Moses, when he was a baby, Pharaoh arose that did not know Joseph. That's the third generation. Who's he? How many of you know George Washington and what he did? Unless you read our history buff. Most of you are worried about, I've got to work tomorrow. I've got to get food. I take care of my kids. Yes.
Maybe a more apt question and trying to get people to understand this analogy wouldn't be asking who knows who George Washington is, maybe, you know, in relation to Pharaoh to Joseph and all that at the time. Maybe a better question would be to ask, how many of you know who George Washington's Secretary of War was? Or who was his vice president?
Yeah, I know who the vice president was. But anyway. That's interesting. It's just true. You know, our history becomes unimportant to us. And our schools today, they don't teach history anymore. What's the big thing that's really big at schools? Get that cotton kid behind a computer. Have them explore what's in the internet all over the place. And of course, make sure he studies this and studies that, studies this. But, you know, make sure he says it full expression to everything he wants to see or she wants to see or know. It's all over the place, right? Now, what's that going to bring? We already have a society of kids who hardly talk to their mom and dad anymore or to one another. Text, 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 text. They don't talk with one another anymore. They don't even know what they feel about it. But just text, 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 text. I think it's kind of funny myself personally, but that's just me, you know. I'm old. Much older than you think. No. And then verse 7, he says, now Pharaoh's servant says something to him. His servants are saying, what are you doing? How long are you going to make this man do the stuff to us? You know, they're using their head. Using their head. And he says, let them go. You know they're going to destroy Egypt? Because see, in reality, in your life and in my life, and we'll see as we go on down the history of Israel, especially in the book of Numbers, they did not see, nor did they hear the word of the Lord. Who did they hear? Moses and Aaron. And so they saw, and this book shows you this, they saw a powerful flesh and blood human being with great massive power. That's what they saw. Now, you remember what God said unto Moses when he was on the mountain? I'll make you an Elohim. Oh. I'll have given you so much power that whatever comes out of your mouth is going to do the destruction. Because I'm working through you, Moses. And you're going to tell your brother, go do it. Go say it. Have your brother speak for you, Moses. And they are going to see an Elohim. And they're going to see a prophet or a man of Elohim, put it this way. And so what I saw was the destruction of Moses. Yes.
I don't know whether I'm taking you off your track or what, but in Revelation, there is a fire-breathing prophet that's got that kind of power too, like Moses, but the opposite guy is
the opposite guy.
Power, you know, the devil is.
Okay, what does the word Elohim mean? We keep thinking it means, oh, that's God. No, what does the word Elohim mean? Mighty ones, the one who has a lot of power, a lot of strength. You remember when Daniel went through Saul? You know, and he went and called from the dead. He called forth Samuel from the dead. Do you know what rose up from the ground? Elohim. And Elohim rose up from the ground. It wasn't Samuel. Now, what do you think that means? Another power. That's why God says, do not seek beneath the earth either. There's powers all over the place. What does Apostle Paul say? That we are dealing with the principalities of the air. How many principalities have you been able to see? You got good eyesight. Can you see? 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 We don't see them. We only see flesh and blood people. In this particular case, what God said to Moses, I'll make you an Elohim, they saw a flesh and blood human being with tremendous amount of power. They didn't see God bring forth the blood on the waters. They saw Moses and Aaron do it. They didn't see God bring forth the flood of the frogs. They saw Moses, saw Aaron do it. They didn't see the lice or the gnats come. They saw Moses, saw Aaron do it. They didn't see the flies or the ants. They saw Moses, saw Aaron do it. That's what they saw. They didn't see invisible stuff. They saw a man so powerful. And it says here in Scripture, we'll get there. He was the most feared man in Egypt. Moses was more feared than any man. You know why? Brought forth death. That's what they saw. They didn't see God do it. They saw the most powerful man that they have ever known to exist in their world do those 10 plagues. Pretty powerful stuff, right? But here God is saying, I want you to tell your sons and your grandsons that I did this. Because the Israelites, believe it or not, we don't think this way, but yet it does. It is that way. They really did know who Abraham was. They really didn't know who Isaac was. They really didn't know who Jacob was. They really know who Joseph was. They really knew their ancestors and their family. Because they weren't living in the towns and the cities of Egypt. They're living where?
Goshen.
Land of Goshen. Their own territory. The territory which God put them and put them there for a reason. Well, of course, you know, the men didn't succeed in telling or convincing Pharaoh. Right? Like losers. As far as Pharaoh's concerned. And of course, he made conditions, okay, who's gonna go? I can get, only you, Ben, can go, maybe the old people can go, but not the children. And he made all sorts of, quote, compromises. I heard that word before. And Moses says, no. And then, like he read there in the 10th verse there in Genesis 10, and here now Pharaoh is saying, let Yahweh do with you what he wants to do with you. I will let you go. And your little ones. And then he uses this phrase. I know they have added words. Pharaoh is looking right at Moses and Aaron, because Aaron was always with him. He says, look! In a sense, Hebrew, look with your eyes, Moses. Look at the bad that you brought, Moses. They didn't see God. He didn't see God having that thing. He saw Moses having the power to do bad things. And then he says, no, you're not going. No one's going. Period. Point blank. And then, of course, Pharaoh drove them out of his palace. Forced them out. An interesting word, by the way, in Hebrew. That word means basically to be driven out. It's also very interesting. It also means to divorce. He's divorcing himself from Pharaoh by casting him out, by getting rid of him, and having nothing to do with Moses again. Didn't want to ever see him again, talk with him, communicate with him again, drove him out. That's the same thing when the woman's gotten a divorce, biblically speaking. She is cast out. She's no longer part of her husband, no longer part of her husband's household. But where does she go? She goes home. Home to whom? She doesn't go home to mommy. She goes home to daddy. The daddy is supposed to take care of her. We'll get that when Leviticus reaches this point. We're not there yet. That's just a side thing. And then, of course, he didn't. So Moses, Yahweh said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for locusts, and they will come up upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the field, all of the hail that is. Now, it was so heavy, so thick, the ground was completely covered. A lot of locusts, or grasshoppers, what you might call them. And they came from the east. And then He begged for something. This eighth plague, the locusts, okay, they covered the entire land. I've never seen any area being covered with entire land with any kind of insects, but then I'm not an insect person to go out and examine those things. I live here in Santa Rosa, hoping no insects will take it over my house. Then he called for him and says, I've sinned. I missed the mark. Really? Really? Did you? And so he says, only, verse 7, my sin, only this once. Well, this time, God asked God to forgive my sin this time. He actually had forgiven it before, if you remember correctly, we won't go back there. And then God said, okay, I'll let you off. How did he let him off? Now that's a big storm. In Hebrew, the word for wind, or the word west, is really means the sea, but it means more than that. It actually comes from the root word, meaning to be extremely noisy, be very large body, and tremendous force. So a major, ever been in a windstorm? I stay inside the house when it happens. Hope the roof stays on. And it could do severe damage. Remember we read the book of Job where the wind whirled around the house and destroyed everything and everybody in the house. It was called a whirlwind, or we would call it a tornado, and just destroyed everything in sight. And so now what? Mm-hmm. Now remember, Pharaoh's heart still is getting stronger against God. Yes.
It says here, and the Lord turned a very strong west wind. Shouldn't that be Mother Nature? Didn't Mother Nature do that?
Okay, let me ask you this question, Bill. You're doing this because you're like, yes, I know who you are. Have you ever met Mother Nature?
Not lately?
Oh, I was hoping you'd be a witness that you met her and she'd explain it to you. Well, no. Oh, that's your answer. Bill, you're funny.
You're letting him push your buttons, you know.
Yes. Now, the last plague is very unusual. You remember the first plague, the blood? How long did it last? 7 days. No mention of how long the frogs, the lice, the flies, the disease, the boils, the hail, the locusts lasted. Could have lasted overnight, could have lasted for a day or two. We don't know. It doesn't matter. All we know is 7 is this one. Now, he stretched forth his hand and darkness, a hoshech, came upon the land of Egypt, but not the land of Goshen. And it was enough to terrorize. Okay, let me ask you this question. How many people have ever been in a place that's so densely dark you can't see your hand? 1, 2, 3 people. One of the very first things when I was in the military, in boot camp, one of the very first things they did, they said, we're going to take you into this tent. Okay. We're going to have a lecture. We're going to teach you something different. Did you ever been taught before? Because this could happen in wartime. And then they blacked out the lights. And the instructor says, can you see your hand? No. You can't see a single thing, can you? No. Be aware. Don't let darkness frighten you in war. Don't let darkness frighten you in war. You'll be as good as dead. Fascinating statement. And I'm looking back at this one, and they said this was so frightening that they were unable to see anything, unable to walk about, unable to go here and go there. Now, but auto, it lasted for how long? 3 days. 1, 2, 3. Interesting. Yes. Something's going to happen. Life or death. That's quite a long time, isn't it? Now, I'm not quite sure, probably after the 3 days, or during the 3 days, somehow Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron, of course, to where he was at. I don't know how Moses and Aaron get there, except they weren't in Hoshech, and Pharaoh was. All the Egyptians were. These two men could see where they were going. It's a fascinating thought. I don't have an answer. I just found that very interesting. How could they possibly go see Pharaoh when in Hoshech is everywhere? Well, I don't know how Pharaoh even sent his messengers out to get to Moses to get the message that says, please come. Yes, you got an answer, Tammy? Or a thought?
Here's a theory for you. Carrier pigeons, you know, they put a little note on the pigeon and send it to, you know, some camp further away that might be beyond the scope.
It might not have been Hoshech for the pigeons. That's true. And maybe they could see. That's an interesting thought, you know. I don't know. Anyway, I don't have an answer. I think it's pretty cool, though, that he said, now you may go and take your flock, take everyone with you. What happened next? Now I saw the light. And since the light was no longer a threat, he changed his heart stronger against the actions of Elohim. Remember the very beginning of these things? God said to Moses, they are going to turn their anger against me, not you, Moses. And Pharaoh turned his anger against God constantly. Did he know who God was? Doesn't make a difference. He just knew a power greater. Somehow Pharaoh knew the power was greater than Moses and Aaron, but his men didn't, and the people of Israel, Egypt didn't know it, but he was an Elohim before Pharaoh. A lot of power greater than his. And of course he hardened his heart. Ninth action is Hoshech. Pretty mad one, don't you think? Pretty bad. And then Pharaoh said, get from me, take heed yourself, see your face no more. And this is very fascinating, verse 28. And Moses said something back to him. He says, for the day I see you, I will kill you. I'm saying, oh, that's interesting. This man, you can't even stop. How are you going to kill him? He's, quote, invincible. You can't die. Of course, Moses turned around and said, what? Yeah, you said it. I am not going to see your face anymore. However, he did. This is a conversation between two men. you did see in the 12th chapter. We get the 12th chapter. We'll get there, 12th chapter tomorrow, and we'll see that Moses did go before Pharaoh one more time. 12th chapter, he went before Pharaoh one more time. Now, chapter 11. This is an interesting statement. Okay, I don't know how it's written in your translations. I use Old English because I'm so familiar with the Old English. I know what it's really saying most of the time. But I do have to do some research of my own to find out where that word come from, why they translate it that way. And section 11 makes sense to translate it as a plague because to them that's what it was kind of referred to. And it says, I will bring one more plague upon Pharaoh, upon Egypt. Afterwards, he will let you go hence. When then he shall let go. He shall let go. He'll no longer hang on. He's going to let go. And he is going to kick you out of his country. That's many a phrase, but not really kick him out. But wants him out. Pharaoh has no power. At this point, when this went on, that word plague, by the way, in Hebrew, it's very interesting. We use the word plague quite often, and sometimes we use it as a general terminology. And sometimes we need to break it down a little bit farther. What is that word really referring to? It doesn't sound like it's the plague. And we think, oh no, is that Sesame DeMille? Right? This fog came in. And the fog covered all the houses, fog covered it. That was the plague, right? And that's how we quote, because as we, our visions are that way, because as we see with our eyes, what Sesame to Bill pictured as, this is how they did it. And we walk through our world, this is how it did it. A plague, like green thing came all over the place to kill everybody. You know, doesn't say that at all. And so I'm not saying how he did it, because God didn't say how he did it. He just did it. All right. So use the word plague. And the basic word of that plague means to lay the hand upon violently. To lay the hand on violently. Destruction. To be stricken. And now, verse 2. Seems really odd. It seemed like, speak now unto the ears of Pharaoh. Now we have this time lapse, it looks like. Well, it could be. I have no idea. God didn't say, tomorrow I will do this. There seems to be a time lapse now. Don't ask me. I don't know. I'm assuming, and my assumption could very well be wrong. Because, you know, assumptions are assumptions. They have no bearing on anything. And of course, he says, you know, every man borrow from his neighbor. And that really does mean to borrow or to acquire or to ask for things. Now, at this point in time, the people of Egypt, not the Pharaoh, not his men, maybe his men, but not Pharaoh, at this point in time, what do you think the citizenship of the Egyptian people, what will you think going through their mind when they had to dig wells, when the frog came into their kitchen and the bedroom and in their pantry, wherever they stored food, and the lice or the gnats were all over the house and on everything, and on the animals, and all these ants or flies all over the place, and the animals died and diseased. They died and had boils on them. What do you think they're thinking about this point in time?
It's a buyer's market. Sell and get out.
Get out! I'll give you anything. Get out of my life. And so, you know, they came and said, by the way, I want some gold. I want some silver. Yeah, here. Means nothing to them. That was too painful for them. Locusts came and ate all the grass. Only one thing they couldn't eat, however, we'll get to that later. And then the darkness, you know, it was frightening, fearful to them. They just want out of this thing. They want to get rid of this thing. Get rid of Moses. Because he's the most feared man. Verse 3. Yahweh gave the people favor in the sight of Egyptians. Why? The man Moses was great in the land of Egypt. And in the sight of his servants. And in the sight of his people. That word great does not mean, oh, he's a wonderful, powerful leader. He's great because he destroys things. So that, you know, next thing is going to happen. They didn't know their son was going to die. Or their firstborn son was going to die. They had no idea. They weren't told that. Pharaoh was. Moses was told that on the mountain. Long time ago. Remember? All killed their firstborn. Now Moses didn't quite understand the picture. So all these plagues came in. Now Moses began to understand more and more about God. He had a lot more yet to learn about God. But he's going to, we'll go through his life in a little while. Now it's very powerful. And that's why you would have those people giving away the food. I mean the gold and the silver. That's what he said for them to take. Later on we know why. But we'll get there when that happens. Now he comes up and he says to Yahweh, now about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt. Now not saying what midnight. Means the middle of the night, basically. We have midnight in our country, right? In our society. When does midnight pass? When the sun comes up? No. We go, and it says, it's 12:01, now it's morning. Now we say, wait, we think it means the sunlight. No, that's not what it means. It means, at midnight, it happened. What happens soon after? Well, we'll see here, more in the next chapter, that the Israelites, a certain orders were given to them, and they follow the order precisely. So in we'll talk about that in more detail next week. I can't do it this week. But it has to do with what's called the watches. In biblical time, during the Moses' time, they were called three watches in the nighttime. And in New Testament time, there are four watches during the time. And that's the Greeks came up with the four watches. And so people started following that four watches during the time of the Messiah. We'll talk about that more in detail next week. And because it says here, we won't hear, but in the 12th chapter, it says, they left in the morning. Oh, even sun was out? No. We'll get to that. You have to kind of pay attention to that when I get there next week. It's though they didn't have watches. They didn't have a, you know, this thing that was big post on it, a round circle with a, you know, triangle sticking up there. And when the sun comes, it casts a light. And then, of course, midnight. What time is it? Can't tell, right? Believe it or not, man was not that dumb during the time of Moses. They really knew how long hour is. They knew how long daylight lasts. They knew how long nighttime lasts. They weren't a bunch of dumb, dumb idiots waiting for some Swiss guy to come up with a watch that glows in the night. And a flashlight, boom. Didn't hear that. They weren't ignorant people. And we go on the study, next week we go on the study about these watches. And there's certain patterns, certain names, and certain situations. You'll see that in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, when we get there. But not right now. Because he got them out of there. Let's see, chapter. Whoops. Where am I at? I went to the chapter. Page 2. That's where I'm at, yeah. And we see here that in this chapter here, the 11th chapter, he says, I'm going to kill them all out. The firstborn of the land of Egypt shall die from the firstborn of Pharaoh and sits upon the throne, even unto the firstborn of the maid servants and that is behind the mill and the firstborn of the beast. And this shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as never was done like it, nor shall it ever be again. So once the curse, once this happened to Egypt, God says, I'm never going to do it again to Egypt. Never going to do it again to Egypt. Why? It's a good question. Why? Huh? What was the purpose? Passover, okay. What's to do with Egypt? Well, Passover has to do with a lamb. Why would God say, I won't do it to Egypt again? He said, go ahead.
He was only to die once. He wasn't to die a second time.
Egypt doesn't have to die a second time. And the book of the prophet says, I am my beloved. Egypt is my beloved. They suffered enough. We think, oh no, they're not. They're rotten people over there. God's got to keep on beating them up and cursing them and damning them because they're not finished yet. No, that's not what God says. He's not going to kill them. Not going to bring this curse upon them ever again. Because God said, we'll get that in the New Testament, Old Testament, really. I have, see now to the house of Israel, I have paid a ransom for you. He didn't say, the Egyptians paid a ransom for you. He says, I have paid a ransom for you. What did he pay? The firstborn of Egypt. They are still in the image of the creator of heaven and earth. We think he should just get rid of them because they're worthless. No. I paid you with the price of the firstborn of Egypt. Now, of course, it's going to lead us into deep future. We won't go there today, but understanding that's a paralleling of another deep price he had to pay, but not just for Israel, but for all mankind, including the Egyptians, who we are supposed to hate or despise or consider dumb and have no brains. Remember, it was Pharaoh. Not the Egyptian people. As Pharaoh and his men, not the Egyptian people. They're out there doing like everybody else does. Planting, growing, taking care of their animals, and eating. Yes?
And even it says that Adonai hardened his heart. So.
Because of how did he do that? Because everything that God did made Pharaoh angrier. Every action God did made Pharaoh angry at God. How do you make someone angry? Talk about that last week, remember? You remember. By the way, it's not going to be an hour and a half, by the way. have you, now don't raise your hand, just think about this. Or have you had spoken to you? I hate you, Mom. I don't have anything to do with you ever. Oh. How about Dad? I hate you, Dad. Get out of my life. Well, that never happened, right? Now, that's the heart speaking. Now, repentance can come. We know that. But when you are beginning to have more and more, quote, being held back from doing what you want to do, all of a sudden you may have a runaway. Regardless of the age. They can be 40 years old and find they hate you so much they have nothing to do with you. Won't talk with you. Won't communicate with you. Won't say hi. Won't send you a letter. Won't say nothing to you. It doesn't add at a certain age. It's what happens when the person's heart becomes hardened. We're not talking about the mind. We're not talking about the mind being set. We're not talking about the the strength being set, talk about the heart. That's what makes people do what they do. All right? So it's kind of the very same thing. So how did God harden Pharaoh's heart? He didn't do it by just saying, I'm going to harden your heart. I got harder now. Now you're harder now. Now you're harder now. Now you're harder. He did things that caused Pharaoh's heart to be hardened. Not necessarily his soul. Not necessarily his strength, but his heart. That's the first thing that God says. Love me with all your heart. What will follow immediately after? Your soul and your strength. God is after the heart. He always said, the book of Deuteronomy says, oh, if they were a brain in their head. See what he said? Oh, it's only if they had enough strength to endure. See what he said? But they were only a heart in them. And we all know what that means, right? I hope. And so it takes a while, and we can look back as we read history about a few of these things, and says, how dumb can people be? Because we have this great, wonderful thing called insight that we got by looking at hindsight that God wrote. See? I want to pay attention to a few things here before we go on, before I finish. On these plagues, the one about the water turning to blood, there's a pattern here amongst these nine plagues. And that pattern is very fascinating because it tells you how God works, not how man works with God or how man works for God, but how God works, period. The first action is a life in the water was killed. In the presence of Pharaoh, number one. Second plague, the action of the frogs in the water came forth from the borders of Egypt, throughout the border of Egypt, in the presence of Pharaoh, number two. What about the third one? The third that is those gnats or those lice came from the dust of the ground throughout all the land of Egypt. This time it was not in the presence of Pharaoh. Oh, number three, Pharaoh wasn't told. Number four, the actions of the swarm, whatever they may be, came upon the land of Egypt. This time it was in the presence of Pharaoh. The fifth action is in the killing of the animals in the field. The time it was in the presence of Pharaoh. The sixth one is the boils, breaking forth from ash of the furnace. This time it was presented to Pharaoh, but not told about this in advance. Oh, parallel number three and number six. One, two, three, four, five, six. Series of one, two, three, and one, two, three. Let's go on. The seventh one is that thunder or hail. Now that was done in the presence of Pharaoh and told about this in advance. The eighth one was the locust or some kind of swarm, or locust rather, and it covered the land of Egypt. This time it was in the presence of Pharaoh. What about the ninth one? Hosea. It wasn't in the presence of Pharaoh, nor was it warned in advance. Gives you a pattern about God. I'll give you this warning. I'll give you this warning. Then I'll let you have it. Okay, didn't get enough. I'll give you this warning. I'll give you this warning. I don't know if you have it. Okay, I'll give you this warning. I'll give you this warning. I don't know if you have it. Every one of the third one is the last thing in the series of three. That's a pattern how God works. Go back and study those things. It wasn't present. Now, God says, I'm going to do this whether you like it or not. I'm going to do this whether I'm going to tell you you want to know or not. I want you to know or not. I'm going to do this because I am God. I am Yahweh. I am Yahuwah. I am the one that came to set my people free. Next week we'll talk about the 10th one. All right? The series of 10, sorry. Hoshet time, darkness. Now, before we get into anything, I'm going to call it quits here just a minute, a second or two. 10 is a very significant number with God. You know, when he inquires a tenth one of the animals, you are to do exactly that. Don't sidestep it. Don't go this way. Don't give anything else. To give the tenth one. He talks about the tithe of the corn, the tithe of the grain, and kind of, it's the tenth omer, or tenth bushel. Not the first one, the tenth one that is given unto him. It's the tenth one, not the first one, it's the tenth one. Now, we have what's called the Ten Commandments. Why isn't there seven? Wouldn't that make it more complete? Just seven? Maybe it'd be better, just add three. Right? Why 10? And for crying out loud, that last one. Even the Apostle Paul says, that's the most difficult one. I can do the rest. But the last one? Wow. And Jesus even brought forth greater, even if you do it in your heart. No one knows about it. And you know what his disciples said? Who can possibly live that way, in a sense? You can't! He says, no, you can't, because flesh and blood cannot do that. There's no number 11. The same thing with number 10. Why go beyond 10? There's no life. It's gone. Nothing's there. Why go farther? Death is death. I killed him, he says. I'd kill the firstborn. No more. Will I do it again? Now, it's fascinating as we go through reading more and more of the rest of Exodus and read more and more of the rest of the prophets, read more and more the rest of the writings, and we get into the New Testament. Then comes the death of the firstborn that God brings about, not people, God.